Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I'm not a climate scientist.
I'm not a climate scientist.
I'm not a climate scientist.
Well, we are climate scientists at the University of Chicago.
Summertime in Chicago. Feeling more like New Orleans.
From the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. To Mike, it's not just another banana peel, it's future dirt. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. For those of you listening old school, which is AM radio, you're cool. You're okay. For those of you listening on the stream, you're not. You're not there. There ain't no stream this morning, which is a little frustrating. Because I got people listening all over the country, you know, Lamanda Joyce here in the studio. And I know that we've got buddies, like I saw Bren in Ohio. I know Annie Haven listens in California. I know David Zaber listens up in Wisconsin. I mean, we got folks all over North Carolina. We got a hot spot of people in North Carolina who like to listen. I saw Helen Yost post on Twitter. These are all the folks who are not hearing us. Let's go through the list. We'll go through the whole list of folks. If you're not hearing us right now, send me a list. Oh, wait. If you're not hearing me, you can't answer the question, can you? Well, we have ordered more chewing gum, chicken wire. It's on the way. Some bobby pins. And we're hoping that we have the stream up at some point. So my order to the folks listening on the radio is to let people know that, to keep the conversation going, keep it going on Facebook and keep it going on Twitter. Because sometimes I think there's a lot of people who don't actually listen who just follow the stream on Twitter.
I think you're right.
You think I'm right? Yeah. You're one of them. Okay. Thank you. Well, it's okay. Cop to it. There you go. In the interest of transparency, Amanda doesn't always listen to the show. She just follows the Twitter stream. Hey, it's the way it goes. So those of you on Twitter doing that right now, that's great and helpful, and on Facebook as well. Good morning. And it's an interesting show today. We're going to go from, let's see, positive to negative charges in the course of about two and a half, three minutes between
hope and despair.
Hope and despair. There we go. Hopium is this is what our guest in the second hour calls people who have hope. He says they're smoking hopium pipes. Wow. I mean, he's
got a lot to say.
This guy was on. We're going to have Guy McPherson in the studio in the second hour. Also, Carrie Leiterson. I'm very excited to have Carrie on the show as well. She's an environmental reporter, has done a lot of work on petcoke, on fracking, frack mining, energy issues in and around Chicago and in Illinois. And she's going to be here as well. But sort of the highlight of this is Guy McPherson. He's professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. And he's got a blog called Nature Bats Last. And those of you who are regular listeners to Chicago's Progressive Talk probably heard him or might have heard him on Tom Hartman's show, the Tom Hartman program, about a week and a half ago. And a lot of you might have, lost your lunch because it was right after lunch. A lot of you probably were wondering what the heck was going on because Guy McPherson comes on the air with Tom and says, basically, it's possible everything could collapse in about 6 years, 2020. And even Tom Hartman was taken aback. In fact, Tom Hartman was taken so aback that he had to rebut this in a blog post a couple of days later or the next day. I'm not sure exactly when he posted it. And I've actually I have the link to that on my website. If you go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. So this is what we're going to talk about in the second hour. Carrie and I will be chatting. I should turn off. This is just dinging like crazy. My little phone here. See, it's just signaling me that it's the end of the world. That's end of the world.
Where'd you get that app?
Yeah.
The apocalypse app.
Thank you. Thank you, the apocalypse app. I'm going to market it. I'll be rich. Won't be able to do anything with the money those are the questions you ask. You say, okay, well, if that's going to happen, then how is it going to happen? What should people do? So anyway, this can be an important conversation. And we're not on the stream. Okay. That's the second hour. First hour is a lot more fun.
Yay!
Amanda Joy is here, and we're going to talk about her brand new book. The book put out by the Peterson Garden Project called Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland. Yay!
Yay!
Still can't. Now, permafrost is still 18 inches deep, but yay! Yikes.
Yay.
I heard a conversation the other day, and I got to get Kathleen Thompson right in just a second. Heard a conversation the other day with the groundskeeper at Sox Park at the cell. He was talking about how he had to bring in these heaters and cover the field and blow the heaters for hours under a tarp just to make the ground warm enough to bring the turf out of dormancy.
Wow.
And then he had to blow air through the drainage pipes under the turf, you know, how they get to drain that on the south side there, just to warm up the permafrost that was below 6 inches or 8 inches down, because that's still frozen.
Wow.
Yeah. Just so they could do opening day. I mean, he said he'd been doing this like 35 years or something, had never, ever seen anything like this.
Mm.
And it's kind of true, because I got parts of my yard that are rock solid. They're rock hard. Ice, just ice.
We have some mountains of wood chips that we need to start spreading, and it's not going to happen for a while.
Exactly. They're just frozen solid.
They are.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, Lamanna will be with us in a second. Let's quickly go to the phones and bring in my editor, Madam Editor, Kathleen Thompson. Kathleen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm hanging in. I mean, considering it's the end of the world and all, you know, doing all right.
I've enjoyed being on hold because that's the only way I can hear your show right now is through the telephone to your station.
Oh, that's right, because we're not streaming.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're not.
Hey, Carrie, when Kathleen's done, I'm not going to hang up on her. I'm just going to put her on hold.
No, you can't do that. Because
why not?
My phone will run out of juice.
Can't you plug it in?
We can have this conversation.
You don't have the plug there, do you? Okay. All right. Well,
I use Mac's plug when I'm up here in Rogers Park visiting, and she's across the courtyard.
All right. You can get the plug from her across the courtyard. That'd be a good thing.
That's right.
Because Kathleen's going to help me with Facebook and Twitter. All right. Before we get to Lamanna Joy, you want to make a last-minute plug for some guy's Kickstarter, right?
I do. Because I'm that guy's publisher around the Block Press, and we have a Kickstarter. And the good news is that we have already made our Kickstarter goal.
Yay!
And the better news is that if we get just a little bit more, we are probably going to be able to do color illustrations in the book.
Ooh.
Allison's fabulous, fabulous illustrations, which are wonderful in black and white, but just spectacular in color. And it looks like because we've gone over our goal, we may be able to pull that off. And what I'd like to explain to people is that this Kickstarter is not directly to raise money for the Mike Novak Show. Kickstarter doesn't work that way. It is to raise money to publish the book, but we will be selling the book to help support the Mike Novak Show. So anything that you decide to pledge on the Kickstarter will, in the end, keep the show that you love on the air.
Because it doesn't come out of my pocket or your pocket.
Your pocket doesn't have anything in it to come out of.
It's true.
If I had to depend on your pocket to publish this book, no, I mean more directly than that, because we will be selling the book, and the proceeds of which will go to help support the Mike Novak Show.
Yes. So anything that doesn't have to go to the book come directly from me or you is a good thing. And so we have, how many hours we got left in this thing?
Oh, we got until tomorrow at, you had to ask.
No, it's Tuesday. Question. It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
All I got to do is go to the Kickstarter and you go to MikeNovak.net homepage. Just click on it and then it will take you right to the
Kickstarter. Anybody can go to the Mike Novak Show homepage. Click on the Kickstarter and, go right there.
And we have 47 hours left. All right.
47 hours. Okay.
Now, I know that Lamanna's also got a Kickstarter going. The Peterson Garden Project has it. We will talk about that in just a few minutes, Lamanna. Are you looking at yours now too?
No, I'm chipping in for yours. I was waiting for today.
Oh, nice. So nice. Well, yeah, the thing is you can go to Kickstarter and you can find either one of the projects on Kickstarter, or you can go to your website and find links to either of the projects there.
Right. I advise people just to go to MikeNovak.net because it's right at the top of the page. It's the easiest way to find it. Then you won't make any mistakes.
Right.
You know, so if there's a competing Attack of the Killer Asparagus book out there, we don't want people clicking on the wrong one. But we have 47 hours, and like you said, even though we have reached our goal, it sure would be nice if people would kick in and help us out, because every buck that comes in, like you said, full color illustrations, how cool would that be? We're very close to that.
We're very close, and you know, the premiums are pretty cool.
Yeah, we added just a couple of new premiums. Tell the folks about that.
Well, we've got some more upscale premiums, And one of them is that you could join us for an exclusive luncheon, you and me, Mike Novak and Kathleen Thompson, for an exclusive luncheon at Uncommon Ground Restaurant, the fabulous Uncommon Ground. If you don't know about it, the food is amazing and healthy and beautiful, and they grow quite a lot of it on the roof. And that's part of the deal, is you get a tour of the first organic rooftop garden in this country.
Rooftop farm.
Farm.
There's
farm.
Been lots of rooftop gardens.
Rooftop gardens. I'm sorry, the farm. And you get a tour of the farm before luncheon. And that is for a $200 pledge. And, of course, you go home with a copy of Attack of the Killer Asparagus, too.
Of course.
And other premium is, and we only have one of these left, two of them have been taken, and it was a limited quantity. We only have one left, and that is that you get to come to the WCPT station as our guest and sit in on the Mike Novak show.
I might even turn a microphone on for you. You never know.
Yeah, I'm thinking you might turn a mic on. That's for $250, but we only have one of those left.
They're snapping those up. So, folks, there you go. A couple more interesting premiums. There are lots of premium. There's illustrations by Allison Hunter, our fabulous illustrator, and other goodies, books. You know what? We're getting pledges here. There's a couple of pledges that just came in.
Well, that's awfully nice.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
Great.
Wait, I got to play this. Okay. I just thought I'd play that.
Well, I think we've taken enough time away from the wonderful Amanda Joy. So I hope people will decide to pledge, and I appreciate the time.
All right, Kathleen. I think you should just stay on hold for a little while and listen to the show or run out to the store and grab a radio or something. Or go to Max.
There's a radio here that just got delivered yesterday, but it's Jim Schultz's radio because I'm staying in his apartment while he's gone. And you know what Jim is like? There's no way to figure out the radio.
It's too high tech. An average human being could not ever figure out how to turn on a real radio at Jim's place. Okay. All right. Thank you, Kathleen Thompson, and we will talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Let's get to LaManda Joy right after I ask you a question. How would you like to stop harmful insects in your garden before they become a problem? Mm-hmm. Hey, you wouldn't even have to look at the ugly little guys, much less watch them munch on your rose bushes. Bonide All Seasons Dormant and Horticultural Spray Oil stops garden insects before they hatch. It's easy to use, and it's an all-natural product that can be used all season long. And I'm very happy to have Bonide back on the show. Great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. Now, early spraying smothers most eggs left behind by last year's plant-destroying insects. And if you use Bonide's all-season spray oil throughout the gardening season, it will control all stages of insects. It's recommended for use on shade trees, fruit trees, shrubs, roses, and ornamental plants. You'll find Bonide all-seasons oil at Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, Graff Gardens in Worth, and Bertolt's Flower Barn in Elk Grove Village. You just, you know, look for the iconic windmill out front. Or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you.
Hello, do-it-yourselfer. Ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at BonniePlants.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
So what happens when March comes in like a lion and goes out like a vicious puma? That's what Tommy Smothers always used to say. Vicious pumas! It's always... I've hurt myself. Now, anyway, the obvious answer is that you hunker down with a copy of the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine until baseball season starts. Wait, that's tomorrow, isn't it? Well, then you should check out the article on Blue Ribbon Gardening, which is for all of you folks who think that the whole point of growing vegetables is to win first prize from your local garden club or even state fair. Now, the four P's for that are plan, prepare, proceed, and place. And that's the important one, right? And I'll bet you didn't even know that you need to follow the rules. It's a good idea to know if there's a show book that will guide you in picking the best entries. There are also tips in this story from James Schmidt, an Illinois State Fair judge and University of Illinois Extension staffer. By the way, there's my column on the inside back page. It's consistently a showstopper. It stops this show dead in its tracks every week. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine at locations all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
Oh, yeah, we're in the garden, the Green Room garden. Mike Novak here with LaManda Joy from Peterson Garden Project. LaManda, so nice to have you here. I see you got your beer. Good. That's good.
It's my trendy green tea to keep up with you.
Oh, it's green tea. Sure it is. Okay. I believe you. I really do. Hey, you guys have come out with this terrific book, and I think it is terrific, called Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland. And I know I watched you the last year as you struggled to write it. Now I know that it was a collaborative effort. You and Teresa Gale, and I suppose some other people chipped in. Who did the illustrations?
We worked with a local artist named Scott Westgaard, and he was great, great to work with.
And what's nice about the illustrations is that they're very practical. You know, show you exactly what you're, you know, that's the thing that folks get frustrated by when they're new gardeners is that somebody explains something in print and they don't see it in their heads. And then you have to have that. And so you've got, like, on page 32, I'm looking at the cut and come again greens. That's one where folks, you tell folks, well, you can take some of the lettuce off and then leave some in the ground. And they go, well, what am I supposed to remove? And in our community garden, Green on McLean, they're always asking me that. Mike, you know, that's sort of the, it probably happens to you too. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. In my garden, I go out to work and then I get, Michael, can I ask you a question? You know, it's like I don't get any work done because people are always asking me questions. But that's one of the things you show them. No, take the outer leaves, leave the inner ones. The plant will continue to grow and stuff like that. And here it's very clearly illustrated, and then on the next page, you know, how it's staking and things like that. And you've got the PTP, PEA, folks, TP. And even you've got the sticking the finger in the ground for the little seed holes there to plant. Cool stuff. No, it's really a lovely book because it's so practical. And you should be proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Are you?
Yeah, actually, you know, like you said, it was not an easy process. You know, Teresa and I are volunteers, and it took us about 16 months in our spare time, taking all the information we'd gathered from Peterson Garden Project classes and different best practices and putting it into something that would be useful for absolute beginners.
Right. And you just take them right through the month, starting in January, end up in December. There you go. And you cover it all, soils and seeds and how to start them and how to make good soil and how to do row covers and how to, you know, how to harvest. I mean, you got a picture of a ripe pea and an overripe pea.
People don't know. I mean, we see this in our gardens all the time. They're excited about growing food, and then they don't know what to do with it. They don't know when it's ready. They don't know what to do with an overabundance of things. So, you know, this book was really driven by our experience over the last years teaching so many people.
I even like I know I've got it on my website. One of the things that you talk about there, hold on, I want to find this in my list. Maybe I didn't put that in. No, it's the one that's where you're saving money and you're not saving money.
Oh,
you know,
bang for your buck.
Bang for your buck. That's mm-hmm. it. Bang for your buck. I thought that's really smart. I've never seen that before in a gardening book. And the idea behind that is?
Well, you know, people grow food for a lot of reasons. Sometimes you grow it because you want
to win prizes, as we just realized.
To win prizes, yes. Well, like, yes. Sometimes you do it to win prizes. Sometimes you do it because you want to try an heirloom variety that you never have a chance to buy in the store. And some people do it to save money. So if you're doing it to save money, you want to economize with what you're growing. So, for example, you know, potatoes are cheap, onions are cheap. Why waste your space growing them if money is your, you know, motivation?
Right.
Whereas, you know, those little packages of herbs are $4, $5 in the store, buy one plant for $2.50 and you're good for the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we really thought that was important because
I thought so too. And I know, do you remember where that is? Because one of the things you said that is not, and I know I'll stump.
Page 17. Turn in your hymnal to page 17.
The Church of the Peterson Garden Project presents, here we are. So more bang for your buck. High value for the amount of space they take up. Typically cheaper to grow than buy. And what you have there is arugula, asparagus, basil, beans, beets. Good. I'm glad you put beets on the list. Cucumbers, eggplant, kale. To me, is the plant that keeps on giving.
Yes.
It doesn't care whether it's hot. It doesn't care. Technically, it's called a cool season plant. Ours just grows all year, you know.
And kale and Swiss chard.
And Swiss chard, too. You can just keep harvesting that all season long.
Yes.
Lettuce. Now, lettuce you can't. You aren't going to get that for a short time.
No. Spring and fall.
Yeah. Mint. Do be careful, folks. Keep it in pots. If you're smart, put it in a pot. Onions, parsley, peppers, radishes, rhubarb, scallions, summer squash, Swiss chard, tomatoes, turnips, and zucchini. Those are all more bang for your buck. Less bang for your buck. Broccoli. Because the plant gets really large.
Yeah.
And you only get those florets. It's fun. It's cool to grow your own. And delicious. And if you want to teach kids how to eat broccoli, let it flower and then give it to them. And then you say, hey, you want to eat a flower?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because one of the things that, and that's one of those harvesting things that folks, they don't
realize it's a flower.
When to harvest it and suddenly it's flowered on them and they go, oh, what happened? Well, guess what? It still tastes good.
That's right.
It really does. It doesn't. So if it flowers a little bit, harvest it. Eat it that day. Broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, corn. Yeah, definitely corn is less bang for your buck. Melons, ours all got stolen. potatoes. I put that on the fence. I mean, yeah, it does take room to do a lot of potatoes, but maybe not that much room because they do them in these 5-gallon containers now, you know.
They take up a little space.
They do.
But they're fun.
But potatoes are fun, too, because
it's like an Easter egg hunt.
It is. Exactly. It's an Easter egg hunt. Yay. Pumpkins and winter squash.
Yeah, those things all take up a lot of space. You know, if you have a lot of space, go for it. But our gardens, you know, are 4x8.
Right.
So.
Right. And in the city, most people don't have a lot of space.
Exactly.
So So those are those are great tips. I mean, you've got things on garden layout. You've got it all. It's a great book. Well, you want to give one away? We should give one away.
Okay, let's do it.
How are we going to do that? Maybe we can. Let's see here.
How about this?
Okay.
Why don't we have someone call and tell us who taught them how to garden? I love those stories. We asked a bunch of stories like that at the Flower and Garden Show, like where they first learned.
Okay.
So let's get a good who taught you how to garden
good,
story.
Who taught you how to garden story? 773-763-9278. And it better not be Roger Swain. Okay, that doesn't count. That does not count. What? Is it her? No. No. Zan was pointing at... Zan, you got to... Zan is in the room. Zan Boney, too, because she brought... What did you... What's that kind of cake you brought?
Let's call it maple pumpkin bread.
Maple...
I sort of made it up.
Maple pumpkin bread. And Zan, of course, works at Peterson Garden Project, too. They didn't even know they were going to be here together this morning. This is how...
It was a lovely surprise.
How devious I am. 773-763-9278. We'll give away a book. Maybe two if we get two good stories.
Sure. Yeah,
you know? Okay. Let's... segue very quickly before we take those to your Kickstarter, because you've got
yes.
a Kickstarter going too, and I put the link on my site, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, so folks know what it is. And you're calling it Fearless Food, a Teaching Kitchen for Everyone. What's that all about?
That's right. Well, we're really excited about this new initiative that we're starting this year. When our garden first started 5 years ago, we would sit around and say, wouldn't it be great if we could teach people how to cook with all the food that they're growing.
Yeah.
And so 5 years later, we are getting the opportunity to have a teaching kitchen at the Broadway Armory. So it's a beautiful, large kitchen space, and it's fully outfitted with ovens and burners and all the big stuff, but it's not outfitted with the little stuff, forks, bowls, whisks, etc. So our Kickstarter is to raise some funds to outfit the stations with the small stuff.
That's really practical.
Well, we're practical people.
You are. You guys are. And then once you've done that, what happens?
We're going to be starting our programming probably in July. It's a busy garden season now, so we have to focus on getting the gardens built and getting people in and getting our groupies educated. Mm-hmm. Orientation starts today, so there's a lot going on. But starting in July, we'll be doing classes that are very home cook oriented. It's not going to be... you know, go and sit and look at someone talking at you about cooking food. Very hands-on. We want to have classes where different ethnic groups can come in and teach, you know, the specialty of their culture. We want to teach about using the things that people grow in the garden, being familiar with grocery store staples, you know, just basic home scratch cooking. And we're really excited about it.
That's great. I was just playing with stuff here, trying to get... I just turned off every browser I had open. I had set them all up ahead of time. I hit the wrong button, and every one of them just shut down on me. Isn't that fun? Okay, because I was going to try to see what we could do to get. And I know we got phones. Okay, there we go. We got some names there. All right, let's take a couple of quick calls and see how people learned how to garden. And we're going to go first to Michael. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
I learned to garden from my mother.
Yeah?
Yeah, we had a rather large kind of farm plot in our backyard. My aunt knew somebody who had a horse farm, so we got some manure and we tilled it in. And we had beefsteak tomatoes, corn. We even did some smaller melons, which you wouldn't think would do great in a place like Illinois, but it was fun.
Really? And you enjoyed gardening with your mom?
Yeah.
You weren't the subject of ridicule or anything, were you, at school?
No, it was a lot of hard work. And, you know, when you're done, you really have something to show for it, whether it's, you know, vegetables or we even did a large kind of evergreen planting. We ended up having one of those turnaround driveways.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of it, we put all these trees with this nice wood chips. It looked really good.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you what. Hang on, Michael. I am going to put you on hold, And I got a feeling that's a pretty good story. We have no criteria for how we're dealing with this, but we'll figure it out in just a second. So hang on, and thanks for the story. Let's go to Melissa. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. Do you have a story?
I do, actually. My son taught me how to garden. When my son was two, I planted my first garden, and he wouldn't stay out of it. He ate everything right out of the garden raw. So ever since then, I have been an organic gardener and canner and everything else. We made his baby food. We made my grandson's baby food. We really enjoy the garden, and it's been family fun all the way through.
Wow. So how is it that you said it made you do organic gardening? And, of course, LaManda, we would be remiss if we didn't tell people that Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland is about organic gardening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did you know that was a good thing then?
Well, this was 25 years ago, and I couldn't keep him from eating out there, and I didn't want him eating all the chemicals. So I had to learn how to garden all over, how to start again.
You had to learn all over again, because were you doing it the so-called traditional way, conventional?
Exactly. Yep.
Using the stuff, the dangerous stuff.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, go ahead.
We have an organic garden now. We have a half acre that we put in, and we call it Just Pick Something. And anybody that needs food or vegetables or anything is more than welcome to come out at any time and pick what they want and help with the weeding. And it's been really neat for the community and for the church. Every bit of leftovers we have, we donate to the church for people who need it.
That's amazing. That's a great story. That is really a great story. Melissa, where are you located?
Oregon, Illinois.
Oregon, Illinois.
Oh,
well, that's very cool. Well, I definitely think Melissa's getting a book. I mean, that's just an awesome story right there.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You hang on and talk to Carrie, and she will take your information, and we will get it. Can we give Michael a book, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Can we give maybe one more away?
Yes, let's give one more away.
How about Josette?
Hi, Josette.
Hi, how are you? I've already, I spoke to someone briefly about my garden.
Yes, that was our phone screener, Carrie.
Okay. Oh, I see.
You weren't on the air. No, now you're on the air.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. This is the mysterious ways of radio.
Oh, I see. Well, I too have a garden, and I've been gardening in the city for about 3.5 years, and my boyfriend about 5 years before that. We're big juicers, so we use our pulp, and we have a compost, and we use rainwater and marine solution to get the best ground. And it's been an experience, and every year we learn more, and it's been amazing what we've been producing, and it's kind of saved us a lot of money.
It can do that. I mean, that's one of the reasons we were pointing out some of the bang for your buck products there. You really can save some money. And also, of course, like in terms of tomatoes, the taste is not even comparable to what you get in a store. I mean, it's like,
I couldn't agree.
Like eating a cardboard box versus real flavor. That's good of you to use what they call permaculture techniques and or organic techniques. Well, that's great too, Josette. All right, we're gonna send you a book as well. So you
thank you.
Yo! I'm so glad you were listening. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, for sure.
All righty, and so we gave away three.
That's good.
It's in your budget.
Yes,
you guys
I think we can manage that.
All right, so we will. We'll have to figure that out. We're just about out of time here. What have I missed here about this great book that folks need to know about? I guess I should ask you how you guys doing Peterson Garden Project this year.
Oh, it's great. It's going on our fifth year. We're going to have about 3,000 people gardening with us.
Oh, my God.
We just finished the Flower and Garden Show. We had 20,000 people come through our exhibit, which was based on the book. So that was pretty exciting. And we were encouraging everybody. Our campaign this year is Fearless in 14. So you see my little Fearless in 14 pin.
I want one of those. Yay.
There you go.
Give me that pin.
You know, our program is set up to sort of be training wheels so people learn this valuable skill. And we have... you know, always encouraged what we call our groobies, you know, growing newbies. And that's what this book is written for. That's what most of our education is geared for, because we think everybody, if they have a skill like this, can make a huge difference by feeding their family, by teaching others, just like Melissa was saying. So it's a great project, and we're really excited to be going on.
And, of course, if we're coming to the end of the world, then, you know, you better know how to grow some food.
Yeah, wouldn't hurt.
And I want to mention our great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show, Bonnie Plants.
Yes.
Which have started again this year. And they helped you for the second year now with the your presentation at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
Yes, they're wonderful.
Your exhibit.
Yes, our exhibit. They're wonderful people. They grow stuff special for us in the South and truck it up so it looks all fresh and happy here when it's not fresh and happy outside. And
yeah.
The smell of those tomato plants sure can do a lot to chase away the polar vortice blues, that's for sure.
Isn't it amazing? The tomato has a smell unlike any other plant. I guess it's used as insecticide as well. I mean, it's just, I don't have it. I'm sorry. Now I'm going to speak. I don't know if it's an herbicide or an insecticide, but you can tell from the smell of the leaves that it's got pungent qualities in the end.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You can make, a concoction. Thank you for the word there, because I can't remember whether it's for an herbicide or a pesticide. Somebody will write to me and let me know, and then I can look it up. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, because that tomatoes just have that, and they're a nightshade family too, you know. So Lamanda, Joy, Zan, thank you guys for coming in. The name of the book is Fearless Food Gardening in Chicagoland, first edition, it says here, so you're expecting to have other editions. And keep in mind, this is organic, for organic people who want to garden organically, but it's also for people in hardiness zones, USDA hardiness zones 5 and 6. Now, if you're in 4 or 7, you're going to be in the ballpark, but this is really for 5 and 6. Where can they get the book?
It's available on Amazon.com, so they can order it there.
And I have the link to that.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
And it's available in a few local retailers. We're working on that now, so it'll be available. And it's a Kickstarter prize, as Alexander is whispering from the side.
Yeah, that's cool. It's all good. It's all wonderful. Thank you so much, Lamanda. It's always a joy to have you. No, get it. It's
dun-dun-dun.
Wait. No, that was the wrong one. I want this one. Oh, what did I? Why didn't?
It's because you closed all your browser windows.
Oh, I did. I meant to do this. There we go. Yes. I'm out of control. All right. We'll talk to you later.
You dig.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
They say we stand for nothing, and there's no way we ever could.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I don't know if we're streaming yet. I know that the powers that be are here working on it. If we do get up online, I hope folks will let me know, because I don't know. Let's go to the phones and bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Good morning, Mike. I wouldn't know if you're streaming online because I'm talking to you on the phone. How about that?
That's the only way you listen to the show. I know. You just wait till you're on hold there and catch the pro. So you get at least 30 seconds, 40 seconds of the show. It's great.
Yeah. I set my alarm clock for 9:01 every Sunday morning, and you wake me up with your silly little song about the Earth, and the rest is
history,
right?
Oh,
I love that
silly little song about the Earth. Okay,
yeah, I love that too. Actually, who sings that? I've never figured it out.
That is a song, as most people know, called "Good Planets Are Hard to Find." That was sung by the Hillbilly Winos. Okay.
Okay. So it's somewhat okay that I call it silly when it's sung by the
Well, except they didn't. They didn't write it. They just.
They just sang it. Okay.
Right. And I'm blanking on the name of the guy who wrote it. I've got it. Steve Forbert or Forbert. I don't know if Forbert. It's probably Forbert.
Wasn't there a Steve Forbert who sang years ago some other songs as well? I'm trying to remember.
There probably is. Yeah, that's not his only song. So,
so my miss on that one. Why didn't you start it with On Wisconsin this morning? I'm a Wisconsin alumni, and they made the Final Four last night.
I know. Congratulations there.
Yeah. I'm really upset though that the game wasn't on non-paid television. Ugh.
Did you
know that? Yeah, it was on cable. It was a big deal.
I watched it. Wait a second. I watched it. It was
girls. That's not what I want to watch.
Oh, I see what you mean. But it was on basic cable.
I don't even have cable.
Okay.
The only cable I have is the stuff that holds together, you know, drawers and things like that. But
well, I'm thinking get rid of it, but that would end the basketball thing. Yeah, but it was like TBS or I think that's what it was.
I got to subscribe to one of these days. All those commercials, you figure after a while, I go, okay, I'll buy it. But hey, what a difference the South Wind makes, right?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been out there since it was 28 degrees this morning, okay?
Yeah, it was a bit chilly this morning. At least the wind wasn't strong, but it's turned around to the south, and you know, you look outside and you go, it just looks warmer. You know, you got that high sun angle, and I think the last bits of piles of the multicolored snow from the last couple of months has begun to almost completely disappear. I have seen a few patches still here and there in some forest preserves, but you know, it's amazing when you think about the potential of what we were looking at a month ago from you know, possible flooding here due to all the snow and the fact that the ground was frozen. This is about as good as you can get heading into the spring season when you have, you know, 80 plus inches of snow and almost 7+ inches of water out of that, just slowly percolate into the soil. And I just checked some of the soil temperatures, basically about where they were last week, right around 42, 43 degrees. We didn't really have much in the way of warm weather over the week. We had a couple of sunny days, but by and large, it was a chilly week. And even though we'll get close to 55 today, I don't think we'll hit 60 today, but a much, much better chance, probably 100% chance of not only hitting 60 tomorrow, but 65 tomorrow.
Wow.
And you'll really begin to see, you know, some cracks in the earth and the ground really begin to open up and, you know, grab onto some of that radiation. So spring-like today and spring for sure tomorrow, I guess, is the best way to characterize the next 2 days around here.
That's welcome news for a lot of people. You know, I don't know if you heard, you didn't because you don't. You don't hear the show earlier, but I was talking about Roger, and I can't remember his last name, who does the groundskeeper at the cell.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, yeah. I've met him a couple of times. He actually, from what I understand, also does the seeding or the grass at Wrigley Field, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think he's involved in both, And he was talking about the permafrost layer when he got to the stadium being like 18 inches down or whatever it is.
Wow.
I mean, ridiculous. And they've had blowers going and tarps out and just to
and
get.
When you really think about it, Mike, the type of winter that we've had, you would think there'd be about a 5% chance of actually having nice weather for the White Sox home opener. And not only are we going to have nice weather, we're going to have spectacular weather. I really don't think we'll hit 60 today, but the 60-degree temperature we'll have tomorrow, believe it or not, will be the first time we actually hit 60 since that Sunday back in November when we had all those devastating tornadoes. So think about that. I mean, from a standpoint of how you can bookend winter, you can really look at that weekend back in November, November 17th, as the last kind of mild weekend in the Midwest. And literally, it was about 2 or 3 days later. Not only did it get cold, but it snowed. And that was really the beginning of winter. And it's kind of unique when you can think about it. Well, the next time we'll actually have temperatures this warm will be on opening day for the White Sox. It really makes it kind of interesting when you think about it that way.
Roger Bossert, and he's the sod father, of course.
Father, right.
Yeah. And yeah, it was just amazing to hear that. So for folks, if I look at my yard, my turf is just, it's brown, and of course the squirrels are digging it up. They are just ripping it to shreds at the moment. Not much I can do about that.
And actually, I wanted to ask you a question because I look out my window, and I just put out, you know, the obligatory, you know, slice of bread every morning for the birds. But what I see out there are two squirrels not only eating the bread very quickly, but one of them actually has a breadstick in his hand chewing on it because – every once in a while, I go through my pantry. You know what? These breadsticks don't work anymore for humans. I'll give them to the birds, but sure enough, the squirrels get them first. Any of your listeners, if they have any ideas how to safely put out bread for birds, but the squirrels don't get them, I'd love to hear that.
I don't think there is a way. You know, the squirrels are gonna have their way. That's what squirrels do.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. And one of the reasons why I was talking about the squirrels and the birds is because I'm sure that many of them have probably gone to this winter, probably figuring out how am I going to get food when it's covered, when the ground's covered with 18 inches of snow, and how the squirrels are going to get to what they buried last fall when the ground is as frozen. And even though, and I kind of let off talking about how we're not going to get massive flooding to the fact that we lost out snow in a very slow way, you look at the weather map across the northern plain states, blizzard conditions are going to develop later on today across the northern plains. Heavy snow has fallen across northern Wisconsin. Believe it or not, Mike, parts of the northern section, the northern quarter of Wisconsin, Ashland, Superior, up towards Duluth, they still have nearly 25 to 30 inches of snow on the ground. Isn't it amazing for this late in the year?
It is. The question is, will any of that appear here? I mean, I gotta compliment you though. Last week, you didn't fall into the trap. I saw some other weather prognosticators in town, mm-hmm. 5 days ago saying, oh, by Friday, it's going to be in the 60s or it's going to be in the 50s. And it really never got there.
No.
And you didn't fall for that. You said, no, it's going to be cold all week.
Yeah. And the thing about it is this time of the year, when the wind blows off the lake, believe it or not, Lake Michigan, oddly enough, the eastern side of the lake, still has about 35 to 40% coverage of ice on it. It's unbelievable. And one of the reasons why you haven't seen it here is because we've mainly had southwest winds that have been fairly strong. Even if you get a northeast wind, it's not enough to bring that ice all the way over. Lake Superior, Mike, is still almost 85% covered, which is unbelievable. So the amount of ice and snow across the northern plain states, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, up into northern Michigan, and even in parts of the upstate part of New York and New England, still a lot of snow on the ground, still very frozen soil, and there are going to be massive, massive flood events that are going to be occurring in that area over the next, pretty much next couple of weeks, beginning with this next storm system. So as we go through the forecast, gorgeous day today, a lot of sunshine. Probably right along the lakefront, the warmest you'll get is maybe 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon, maybe up to 54, 55 degrees, well inland, barely cracking 57, 58. I don't think we'll hit 60 today, but a much better chance tomorrow. 65 for high tomorrow, much of the day, windy, warm, great day for baseball. A couple of sprinkles develop late in the afternoon, better chance overnight. And then we get right back into cooler weather for Tuesday, Wednesday. Most likely readings only in the 30s along the lakefront, low 40s and well inland. When I say inland this time of the year, I'm talking like Fox Valley, and a very windy, raw, rainy day Wednesday and Thursday with cooler weather still for the rest of the week. So today, great. Tomorrow, mild. But the rest of the week, still very, very much March-like, Mike, without a doubt.
It's weird. We're going to have this one really nice day for opening day for the Sox, and then it goes back. What?
Yeah, watch it be 39 degrees and drizzly for the Cubs, right?
One can only hope. Oh, that was mean, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was.
I'm sorry.
Go Badgers, right?
Go Badgers. Hey, congratulations. I'll be watching Michigan tonight. I'd love to see like 3 Big Ten teams in the Final Four. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would make it very easy to win a bet for who might get into that. Yeah. Good stuff.
All right, Rick. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, second hour. It gets a little more serious. Guy McPherson will be in studio. Kerry Leiderson will be in studio talking about climate change and the inevitability of quick change. I hope you stick around.
Of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And they wrote that song, what, 45 years ago? Boy, you just have to be, well, there were a lot of things going wrong in the late 60s and early 70s. Actually, starting, you know, in the 50s and 60s when, you know, the Cuyahoga River was lighting up like a candle, Roman candle, and other things going on. I'm happy to have in the studio Kerry Leiderson. She's an environmental reporter in the Chicago area, and she writes for Midwest Energy News, among other things. You've been printed in a lot of places, haven't you?
I used to work at the Washington Post and some other places,
just
too.
That little place, okay. Are they having the same problems that the Trib is having in terms of cutting back? And
I think everywhere is.
Yeah. And unfortunately, one of the first places One of the first areas it suffers is the environmental reporting. I saw that, you know, the New York Times, the other, like last year or the year before, said, oh, well, so much for our green reporting. We're going to cut that back. Because as we know, it doesn't make any difference in the world, really. Also in the studio with me is Guy McPherson. Is it McPherson or Ferson? McPherson.
Whatever you call me, I can assure you I've been called worse. So well, fire away.
And in print. Guy McPherson is the Professor Emeritus of Natural Resources and Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Arizona. He is the author of Nature Bats Last, which is a blog, and the actual URL for that is guymcpherson.com. You told me something interesting as you walked in the door, Guy, and that is Tom Hartman wants you back on his show.
That's right. I was on his show about a week ago. I was scheduled to be on just the opening few minutes. And when we finished that segment, somebody else was due up. So we talked to them for 15 minutes. In that intervening 15 minutes, I got a call from somebody on his staff and said, we've got to have you back on today. So I came back on after that first little segment. I came on the third segment of the show. And then somebody from the staff called me a few days ago and said, hey, we want to have you back on again. I see you're going to be on a tour. Can you come to the studio in New York and we'll hook up with our studio in Washington, D.C.? Mm-hmm. So apparently I said something that got his attention.
Well, yeah, you got everybody's attention that day. It was funny because I was listening to that program. I was out running some errands and I heard the conversation. And then I heard Tom say, well, we have to get to a hard break. It's been great having you on the show. And I'm screaming at the radio. I said, screw the commercials. What's wrong with you? You got to continue talking. Well, apparently he figured that out. And I'm sorry. And I think there were a lot of people who felt the same way who were listening to that program. Because you said some things that what you consider hard truths about what is happening on our planet and where we stand in the world of climate change. It made my jaw drop I saw some other people. I read on Tom's blog. I went to see because he's done a post since then, which I have posted, and I've got the link on my website, mikenovak.net. Your blog site is Nature Bats Last. And his was Hope Dies Last, and he's quoting Studs Terkel here. Right. And I think what happened is that Tom had you on. He obviously hadn't read much about you beforehand because he wasn't prepared for what happened. And I'm not blaming him for that at all. Until I heard you, on that show, I had not heard about you. And so I have subsequently done research on this question. Now, I'm not a scientist. I'm a radio guy, all right? But that's got to be one of the problems in what you write about. We'll get into that in a second. The point is, if you want to read what Guy McPherson is writing about climate change, where we're headed, you can find that link on my website, mikenovak.net, or just go to guymcpherson.com. I would encourage you to go to Guy's climate change summary and update, which you're constantly updating. When did you start that?
I started that in January of 2013. It was a couple thousand words at that point, and I updated it yesterday, and it's up to about 8,000 words now.
Not counting the links, though. If you follow all the links, you'll be there for weeks.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And pretty much every statement there is linked, and most of those links are to the refereed journal literature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some pretty solid evidence there that we have triggered events that are going to take us into the existential abyss.
Not existential abyss. You're talking about the physical abyss.
That's right. I'm talking about the end.
Physical. Right. Exactly. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the things I heard on Tom Hartman's show was the possibility that by 2020 we're going to be in hell in a handbasket here.
Well, I think that the evidence points towards a 4C temperature rise by 2030 above baseline. Mm-hmm. Humans haven't existed on the planet at 3.5C above baseline. Northern hemisphere, the changes are going to come more quickly than they are in the southern hemisphere for a couple of reasons.
What are those reasons?
Well, one, there's so much methane being emitted out of the Arctic, particularly out of the Arctic Ocean. And so that's heating up the northern hemisphere far more rapidly than the southern hemisphere. Also, the northern hemisphere is where all the land is on Earth. Land masses heat up more than twice as fast as the global average. So the southern hemisphere has a third of Africa, South America, New Zealand, little island called Australia. That's it. The northern hemisphere is
a little
really,
island called Australia, which right. is practically on fire at this point.
That's right. That's right. And so you look at the interior of land masses, and that's where changes are happening particularly rapidly. And in the southern hemisphere, there is far greater water-to-land ratio than there is in the northern hemisphere. And water, ocean water, the marine environment is really good at ameliorating temperature changes, especially temperature increases that are ongoing now.
All right, we'll get into more detail, but start with your best-case scenario, worst-case scenario.
Oh, well, I'm not sure I have cases. I have the evidence, and what I've done is compiled the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence indicates to me that we have triggered the clathrate gun or the methane bomb in the Arctic. This is one of the things James Hansen worried about in his book, Storms of My Grandchildren. And in addition, we've triggered an additional 30 or so self-reinforcing feedback loops.
That seems to be one of your key points, is that the self-reinforcing feedback loops are going to cause nonlinear change that is, when you say nonlinear, it's unpredictable.
That's right.
Nonlinear. I mean, you're predicting unpredictability.
Yes. Nonlinear, unpredictable, and in this case, all of the unpredictability leads to predictions that have greatly understated this situation with respect to climate change. So, for example, here's a quote from the journal Global Policy from February of last year. A suite of amplifying feedback mechanisms, such as massive methane leaks from the subsea Arctic Ocean, have engaged. That says to me that we've triggered the clathrate gun, that clathrates, methane hydrates, or methane is coming out of the Arctic Ocean at an exponential rate at this point. And the exponential function is kind of a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because things happen so rapidly, so much more rapidly than we anticipate with our linear style of thinking, the kind of thinking that we're accustomed to.
So you're saying that carbon dioxide is kind of a innocent bystander compared to the methane that's being released?
Well, the combination is truly catastrophic. Looking only at carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, John Davies, writing for the Arctic Methane Emergency Group on September 20th of last year, concluded that there will be very little habitat for humans by 2040. And that's just looking at carbon dioxide. So tack on one more greenhouse gas, methane, and it looks like things are really, really dire in terms of continuing the human experience on this planet.
I'm going to encourage folks to call in today, 773-763-9278, as you hear this stuff. And, you know, I don't know how many scientists I've got out there listening to the program, but I'm certainly interested in people's opinions of this. We'll go through this as much as possible. I do want to bring Carrie into the conversation, because Carrie covers these things in a more immediate way, looking at things that are contributing to global warming, like our use of coal, fracking, oil spill in Lake Michigan, 20% of the world's fresh water. And here we are wondering just how much did they spill in Lake Michigan. Have you been following that? I know you have a little bit, but you're not necessarily writing a story on it, are you?
No, yeah, I'm not. And, you know, I might not have the latest blow by blow, but, you know, it does sound like, I mean, in the larger scheme of things, it's relatively small, but they did underreport and, you know, sort of obscure the size of the spill. And
that, gosh,
I mean,
that's a surprise,
sort of
isn't
typical,
it?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that never happens. I still think about the Gulf of Mexico, where BP basically got off scot-free. Mm-hmm. We don't even know. I have no idea what the real damage caused was there. And they can use that track record to, I don't know, lay waste to Lake Michigan as well. This is just insane that we tolerate it, you know, and it leads to things like the, you know, 400, blowing past 400 parts of carbon per million in our atmosphere. By the way, again, that's Guy McPherson in studio with me, Carrie Leiderson. And Guy is the author of Nature Bats Last, as in a baseball game. And I'm just being told now that our stream is up again. Woohoo! All right, so we are streaming, and I hope that folks who are online will be able to take advantage of this as well, because we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and you're always welcome to call in 773-763-9278. I'm going to get ahead of the game here. I'm going to take care of some business, because I'm in the present at the moment and I need to do this. And then when I come back in this order, I want to talk just a little bit about coal and then slip back into the conversation with Dr. McPherson. So, Carrie, we can talk about some of the stuff that you've witnessed going on in Illinois regarding fracking and coal. We will do that in just a moment. Now, as I told you last week, there are some changes this year with Christy Weber Farm and Garden. They have a new website. Just go to CWFNG.com, or you can spell it out, Christy Weber Farm and Garden.com. Either one will get you there. Other than that, they're doing the same things they've done in the past to make them an urban oasis in the heart of the Ukrainian village. Think seed starting, certified organic vegetable and herb starts, bulbs, beekeeping, wild bird feeding, annuals, perennials, tropicals, great containers, and great folks at the Garden Center who will help you with everything you need for your little piece of paradise in the city. They also feature free classes this week. It's Fairy Gardening with Sophie on Thursday, April 3rd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Think CWFNG. Think Christy Weber Farm and Garden, 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago. Find them on Facebook or go to CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
Have you promised yourself that this is the year you're going to start enjoying some really fresh, organic, locally grown vegetables? Do you have the time and the yard to grow them? If not, you should think about getting a CSA share from Purple Leaf Farms. Now, you know about CSAs, right? You provide the farmer with some seed money. Get it? Seed money. Oh, I didn't. Well, okay. Drum roll. When the crops are ready for harvest, you get your share fresh out of the ground. If you sign on with Purple Leaf Farms starting in late June or early July, you begin receiving weekly shipments of produce that are fresher than fresh. They use organic methods, no synthetic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, or synthetic fertilizers. You'll receive 6 kinds of vegetables, 2 kinds of herbs, and get this, 1 large mixed flower bouquet every week for 15 weeks. Fresh flowers every week, and you don't have to be in a tragic and ultimately doomed romantic relationship to get them. Order a CSA from Purple Leaf Farms today. You will not be disappointed. For more information, go to purpleleaffarms.com or call 312-437-7542. 312-437-7542.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hang on a second here while I change the dial so that I can actually play my music when we're ready to go here. There we go. Let's do that one. And meanwhile, you can have a beautiful landscape and be kind to the environment. For great growing results, you need to try Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer. It's slow-release, goof-proof formula, provides consistent feeding, and it's safe for your children and pets. Whether you're a seasoned or novice gardener, trust the fertilizer that's been proven effective for over 85 years. Use Milorganite for all your lawn and garden needs anywhere you want good things to grow. Milorganite, for better results naturally, visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you. Okay, maybe the music's going to go, maybe it's not. Okay, let's not worry about it. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In the studio, I'm very pleased to have Carrie Leiterson, environmental reporter for Midwest Energy News and other sources, formerly of the Washington Post. Guy McPherson, professor emeritus of natural resources and ecology at the University of Arizona. Carrie, you've been following the coal issue in Illinois. I've mentioned it on the show recently. Jeff Biggers has written a lot about it as well. I'm sure you're familiar with his work.
Yeah.
He says we're in a coal rush here, which is just a little bit scary when you think about the scheme of things and what Dr. McPherson is going to talk about in just a second. Where and in particular, it seems like there's a mad rush to chop down trees and strip mine down there. What's going on?
Yeah, well, so Jeff's, you know, talking about the situation in central and southern Illinois where there's some battles going on right at the moment over expanding existing mines and then, of course, clearing forests or, or farmland to do that. And I mean, the bigger picture with coal is really complicated and interesting because obviously we've been shifting to, you know, to some degree away from coal as an energy source, really mostly because of fracking and the cheaper natural gas in the past few years. And also just the fact that a lot of the old coal plants are being forced to retire because they can't make the upgrades they need to meet federal regulations economically enough. But at the same time, so that's happening. But at the same time, the coal lobby and coal industry is still really powerful, especially in Illinois. So they're pushing hard for new uses for coal, for the quote unquote clean coal, and then the whole idea of exporting coal to China, which, you know, that's not directly happening with the Illinois coal right now, but that's kind of the bigger picture. So basically, the coal industry is fighting really hard and, you know, so far fairly successfully to stay relevant and to keep growing.
Well, but you've also written recently about how clean energy in the state is actually doing well at the same time. So it seems contradictory almost.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily contradictory for better or worse. We do and can have both coal and wind, both clean and dirty energy. I mean, we have a mix right now, and we're not going to transition to all clean energy anytime soon, that's for sure. So whether we like it or not, we're going to continue to have a mix. And Chicago is a hub for clean energy research and manufacturing, you know, in terms of components for wind turbines and batteries and all that. But that doesn't. I mean, Illinois is not bad in terms of percent of renewable energy, but that's almost separate from the role that we play also in the actual clean energy research and manufacturing sector.
Doesn't it put Governor Quinn in an odd situation where he's promoting coal use and then I guess he's of Obama's all of the above strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's able. I mean, it's not like they're necessarily directly competing in Illinois. So I think politicians can and have promoted, you know, both dirty and clean energy. I mean, it's not necessarily, there's different ways you promote them. And, you know, you can give subsidies to both. I mean, you could definitely argue that much more subsidies shouldn't be given to dirty energy and could be given in numerous ways, much more to clean energy, different aspects of clean energy.
And then there's the energy that is touted as clean, but the result of its extraction is awfully dirty, and that's fracking.
Right. Well, and
natural
clean
gas.
Coal. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know,
so there's no such thing as clean coal. That's my mantra on the show. It's no such thing as clean coal.
Right. And especially the mining, no matter how clean, and, you know, they have gotten, aside from the carbon dioxide issue, which they still haven't figured out, they have gotten down to really low emissions with the other types of air pollution. But, you know, if you're burning coal, you're going to have to get it out of the ground regardless. There's no getting around that. So, I mean, I agree that there's no clean coal in that aspect. And I don't know that people call natural gas clean necessarily, but it is always described as a bridge fuel and, you know, cleaner than coal.
Well, I don't know. That's what I hear. It's what I see. The clean alternative is natural gas, except that they don't take the extraction into account when it's fouling waters and causing earthquakes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. McPherson, I look at you and I think, are you a doctor, by the way?
I am.
Okay. Just want to make sure. This must seem almost silly, talking about these kinds of issues, because what you're saying is we're so far past that we're dithering I've seen the fiddling while Rome burns kind of thing. While the planet perishes, here we are fighting these battles over whether we should strip mine or do fracking or whatever. And obviously it's not helping when we're burning coal.
Right. And so I have a couple of responses to that. First of all, I think that people should do what they love, that resistance against the dominant paradigm is an excellent idea. If the best judge of a man's character isn't how he treats those who can do nothing for him, as somebody once said, though I can't recall who, then maybe the best judge of our character is in how we treat those, including non-humans, who can do nothing for us. Currently, industrial civilization drives 200 species to extinction every day. Currently, industrial civilization fouls the water and dirties the air, worse every single day. Currently, industrial civilization erodes all the soil from what was a once fertile country into the oceans. So I'm a huge fan of resisting the dominant paradigm by pretty much any means necessary. And if that means terminating subsidies for coal, and in fact pointing out that there's no such thing as alternative energy, there are just derivatives of fossil fuels, not alternatives. How much oil does it take to make a solar panel? How much coal does it take to make a wind turbine? And so on. Then I'm a big fan of eliminating all of that. As Tim Garrett pointed out 5 years ago in a paper published in Climatic Change, only complete collapse prevents runaway climate change. I suspect it was too late then.
Yeah, that's one of the takeaways that I get from your blog, is that as you say, complete collapse is the only thing that will save us, and it's probably too late. And what do you mean by complete collapse?
I mean, no food at the grocery store, no fuel at the filling station, no water coming out of the municipal taps. I mean, no part of industrialization must remain. And by the way, when that happens, if that happens, what that does, according to Clive Hamilton's latest book, Earth Masters, which came out about a year ago, is that all the sulfates come out of the air in a relatively short period of time. And so that adds 1.1 C to the temperature that we're at already above baseline, which is 0.85 C. That takes us to 1.95 C above baseline. What do you mean? No, that's the 2-degree target that is the political target we claim to be aiming for. Even collapse at this point takes us to 2 C.
The event of collapse itself boosts the temperature.
Because all the sulfates produced by industrialization drop out of the air. We saw this post 9/11. Within 3 days, temperature was profoundly changed. So when collapse comes, when the set of living arrangements goes away, then we trigger 2C or more just as a result of the sulfates not being in the air. So either way, we're done. If you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, then I propose that we do. And if that doing means getting rid of dirty coal, because there's no such thing as clean coal, as you point out, then let's do that. If that doing means doing almost anything different than what we've been doing for the last 150 years, I'm a fan. So let's do things differently. And I propose that at the level of individuals and families and communities as well as societies.
How do you see this playing out? Or is that not your purview to do? I mean, you are you're not a sociologist, so perhaps you don't have this, but you must have thought it through. I mean, you see is it famine, pestilence, civil strife, unrest, all of the above, and in what order?
Yes, all of the above. And bear in mind, I'm not a big fan. You know, I'm this is a lonely message of
you're a pariah in some places.
Right. And so it's not that I want this to happen. It's not that I'm cheerleading for human extinction,
mm-hmm.
just to be clear. What I suspect will happen is that we will have collapse of American empire, that the settled living arrangements will go away in the United States and then in the world within the next few years.
A few years?
Within the next few years, yes.
I mean, are you talking a decade, 2 decades, or are you talking?
No way.
What goes away in a few years? The whole structure of the United States of America and the rest of the countries in the world?
Yes, that we don't have the ability to have water coming out of the taps, that we don't have the ability to deliver food to the grocery store and all that sort of thing.
And how does that infrastructure collapse?
We have either a Lehman Brothers on steroids event, a massive deflationary event, or a hyperinflationary event.
So
that triggers
panic and
it means that money becomes worthless.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And so
which triggers a panic, of course.
Right. And so when the world's reserve currency is worthless, then I suspect that will have repercussions that go beyond the United States. So I would imagine that happens first before we have mass mortality of human beings. With that in mind, we already are observing 5 million people a year dying early deaths because of climate change. 5 million people a year. So there's a significant number of people dying already because of climate change.
I would assume that's heat-related, lack of water-related, sanitation.
Yes, there's interactions between climate change and water availability and sanitation. So most of those deaths are occurring in what we would call third world countries, in sub-Saharan Africa for the most part. So massive mortality of human beings hasn't affected the so-called first world yet, but the wolf is always at the door. It's not that far into the future.
Well, we do know that there's a massive amount of economic inequality in our country, only getting worse, in the world, only getting worse. There have been warning signs. That's, you know, you want to look at total collapse, you know, I'm not sure I'm buying everything you're saying. Again, I'm not a scientist. But I do know that there are warning signs, and Carrie, you know these. Look at the economic inequality. Look at the garbage in the gyres in oceans all over the world. Look at the monarch butterfly. I mean, and its precipitous drop in population.
Right.
You talked about the number of species that go extinct every day.
Yes. Right.
I mean, we've got these things in front of us that are actually happening.
Yes, that's exactly right. We also have this huge debt problem, right? When Barack Obama took office, the national debt, the United States national debt, already exceeded all of the currency in the world combined, plus all of the value of the gold in the history of the world ever mined. The debt has gone up more than 50% since then. And so there's no way to repay that. When people actually recognize that our dollar bills are worthless, where does that go?
So, I'm sure you'll get an argument from Tom Hartman on that about he's more of an economic philosopher than I am.
I get arguments all the time. In any event, to get back to your question, was how do I see this playing out?
Yeah.
I foresee collapse, which is ongoing. Currently, we're, according to a Wall Street advisor, we're at 37.2% unemployment in this country. So this set of living arrangements hovers on the brink and has been decaying for quite some time. And so I see that ultimately going away. And what that does is trigger tremendous heating, especially in the interior of large continents in the Northern Hemisphere. Where I live in the southwestern interior of North America, what that means is we see a temperature rise, an average temperature rise of not 2°C, but instead of 5 or 6°C. No human survived that beyond a period of weeks. And so there's this, again, this interaction between the industrial economy and climate change. And every day things get worse. Everybody I know thinks that every day things get better because we have all this interesting technology like smartphones. So where I see this leading ultimately is we run out of habitat for humans first in
the What about the people who say, all right, in the hot area, say, I'll move north to a cool area. If you're on the coast, I'll move, you know, inland to where the ocean isn't rising up over my home. Your scenario allow for migration?
Well, at some level, yes. But you have to bear in mind that just moving north in the Northern Hemisphere, moving from, say, Chicagoland to Manitoba, where it's a little cooler, isn't going to help grow food. And ultimately, I suspect the thing that will cause the most human mortality will be hunger, will be lack of food, will be famine. What we used to call famine back in the day, before we became so focused on individual lives instead of populations when it came to humans. So when you move far enough north, you run out of soils that are capable of growing food at scale. And ultimately, you run out of habitat, period, because the temperature swings, as well as the high temperatures, will cause massive plant mortality and already are causing massive plant mortality. So without food, it doesn't really matter how cool you can keep your body temperature.
Anytime, Carrie, you want to talk him off the ledge, you're welcome to jump in. Imagining somebody who just happened to tune in on a Sunday morning. I'm on my way to church. Okay. And, maybe I better say two prayers instead of one today. That's Guy McPherson, Professor Emeritus of Natural Resources and Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Arizona. Also in the studio with me, Carrie Leiterson. I'm going to take another break, and then we're going to take some phone calls. But before I do, very, very quickly, a couple of things. There are people who think you've gotten it wrong. A guy named Scott Johnson, which I'm sure you're aware of. He says, I'm going to read from his blog post since he's not here. He writes, let's briefly lay out the central claims of McPherson's position and review what the science really says. I think those are, one, positive feedbacks imply runaway global warming. Two, we will experience at least 3 to 4 degrees centigrade warming in the next couple of decades. And three, on a 4°C warmer planet, humans are dead. And he takes issue. For instance, he says there is such a thing as a runaway greenhouse effect. Just ask the planet Venus. However, a recent study looking at what it would take to trigger such an event on Earth ballparked the requirements at around 75 times the amount of carbon dioxide currently in the atmosphere, 5.5 times the methane, and some other greenhouse gases. The business as usual scenario in the latest IPCC report, and by the way, it comes out tomorrow. Where we do nothing to curtail greenhouse gas emissions ends the century at about 2.3 times today's CO2 and 2 times the methane. We have a lot of things to worry about, but a runaway greenhouse isn't one of them. I'm sure you've already seen what he's written. And
yes, I have. And yeah, I've actually thought about it.
Well, good. I'm happy to hear that.
As near as I can tell, he didn't think about it before he wrote it, but I've thought about it since
he wrote
it.
He says the same thing about you, okay?
I know.
So you got two scientists yelling back at each other about this. somebody's right and somebody's wrong, or is it somewhere between the two?
I suspect that at least somebody is wrong.
All right, you're very...
At the very least.
You're very...
He's citing an organization that we know has been incredibly conservative and putting out a document that is vetted through the political process before it's released.
And you don't have a lot of patience for the political process at the moment and the documents that are put out by the political process.
No, I don't. I mean, for example, all of this information that I'm reporting is widely known to politicians. Certainly to national level politicians.
So why is nothing being done? I guess that's my other question is,
exactly.
Barack Obama knows this, the CIA knows this, the NSA knows this, everybody in high upper echelons knows this, and yet they are doing business as usual.
Exactly.
So they want the world to collapse? Is that the idea? Or do they think it's going to, so we're going to, you know, magically escape it somehow?
No, I think they're doing everything they can to keep the balls in the air for as long as possible. You don't know you've triggered a self-reinforcing feedback loop until after you've triggered it. You can only see it in the rearview mirror. And, of course, essentially every citizen of this country wants to maintain this set of living arrangements. And it doesn't really matter that we drive 200 species to extinction every day. It doesn't really matter that would cause mass mortality in other countries with every drone we send. People want to maintain this set of living arrangements at all costs. And politicians who run on a contrary message are not going to be elected. There's no politically viable approach to dealing with either collapse induced by global peak oil or dealing with runaway climate change. There's no way to get elected if you point out that...
That's true, actually.
Yeah, right. So why would they? There's nothing in it for them. There's very little money in economic collapse. As nearly as I can tell, there's none to be made by pointing out extinction, human extinction.
And you think ultimately that's where we're going?
I can't see that we can stop it at this point. We've fired the clathrate gun.
But you're preparing. You live in the mud hut. You've got this thing you call the mud hut. And, you know, you're trying to be use permaculture techniques to exist. What's the point? Why not go out and have a, you know, bottle of champagne?
I made the decision to do that 6.5 years ago before the situation was so dire on the climate front. It was unquestionably the worst mistake of my life. I'm glad you brought that up just to sort of rub it in a little bit.
Well, I didn't realize I was rubbing it in. Okay.
No, that's okay. Of course, we adhere to the principles of permaculture at the Mud Hut. That decision was made a long time ago. If I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have made that decision to move to that place.
Really?
No question about it. Because in part, I moved there because of the collapse that was coming. Now we know that when collapse comes, it will drive the temperature increase there to such a high level that humans won't survive beyond a few
weeks.
And
where is that located?
This is southwestern New Mexico.
Yeah, I thought about that. I figured you were in that part of the country, and I'm thinking, that's got to be, with global warming, that's got to be a crazy place to set up shop.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
I'm going to Manitoba.
Hey, mistakes.
That's going to be my new bumper sticker.
Mistakes were made, man. Mistakes were made,
okay.
Including by me.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad to hear that you are human after all. Okay, I have to break, and then we'll take some phone calls. And I'm telling you, Carrie, anytime you want to stop him, talk him off the ledge.
Please do.
You know, I think just quickly, I mean, to me, it really doesn't matter whether we're talking about collapse. I personally don't foresee that collapse situation happening, especially not first in the U.S. But, I mean, I think the bigger picture is we know it's bad regardless. And, you know, personally, I think all the things you say about politics and what's being done and what's not being done, it doesn't even matter if you're talking extinction in 40 years or if you're talking what's already happening, especially in developing countries. So, you know, I personally just sort of tune out sometimes. And I lived for a year in Boulder, which, you know, is ground zero of the heated debate over the minutia of the different studies, which, you know, I personally think just remains to be seen. I don't think anyone's wrong or right. So, but we'll see what we can do.
Well, you know, the fact that there is this debate, maybe this is the best thing that could happen, is that there is this debate. And I wish there were more people out there. You may disagree with Scott Johnson and what he writes, but at least he's responding. At least he has taken up the gauntlet and is trying to make a cogent argument for something that you disagree with.
Well, yes. Furthering the discussion is the best thing I could hope for at this point. I don't expect people to accept what I say unquestioningly. I never taught like that in the 20 years I was at the University of Arizona. I didn't use a sage on the stage approach. I asked questions, and I expected students to ask questions as well.
Okay.
I used classroom anarchy.
Classroom anarchy.
Chaos is an absence of rules. Anarchy is an absence of rulers. Anarchy means taking responsibility for yourself and for your neighbors.
So
I employed classroom anarchy where all the voices in the room are contributors to the conversation, can move the discussion forward. So I'm a huge fan of having this conversation, and I appreciate you having it on your show.
Well, I had to, and especially when I found out you were in town, and it just worked out that you could be here in the studio. You're scaring people half to death, but maybe that's not a bad thing. So we will continue the discussion in just a second. Now, as you can probably guess, you know, and it just seems weird to go into talk about lawns at this point, but healthy lawns all start with good seed, and seed's going to be important in the future. And you can get the best grass seed available from Bonide. Their DuraTurf grass seed mixes use the best varieties of grass seed for your growing conditions. When you start using Bonide's full sun, sun and shade, or dense shade grass seed mixes, you'll have a lawn that is self-repairing, resistant to disease, and grass nasty insects. These grasses will even grow in soil that isn't perfect, and there's a lot of that in urban and suburban areas. Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed mixes are special formulas to meet your lawn's needs. Bonide's full sun mix, for example, combines fine textured blades with durable heat resistance. The dense shade mix is ideal for seeding under trees. So start, but do me a favor, don't put it right up to the tree. Just around, you know, keep a mulching where that tree is, because your lawn and your tree are going to do a lot better. Start planting this year's lawn right now. You'll find Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed at these fine stores: Alsip Home and Garden in Frankfurt, Atrium Garden Center in Lake Zurich, or Village Green in Rockford, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only: lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
If you were interested in changing the world, and it seems like it might be necessary right now, you could do a lot worse than to follow the model of Julie Russo from Recycled Granite. She's the woman who in 5 years has figured out how to keep 30 million pounds of granite from ending up in landfills by creating methods, machinery, and markets to recycle scrap granite. How does Recycled Granite do it? They resize the material into user-friendly dimensions that are more efficient and economical to transport and install. Their recycled split stone tiles are split thin, allowing twice the coverage of traditional tiles, greatly reducing environmental impact. Their recycled granite pavers are three times stronger than concrete pavers and will never fade or wear. And their Green Abilities program provides opportunities for folks with disabilities to go through a recycled granite artisan apprentice certification. The program teaches them how to specifically work with recycled granite waste. Go to recycledgranite.com to learn more, or find them on Facebook, or call 800-692-4642. 800-692-4642.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks.
Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm, of course, coming out of the conversation that we've been having. I have to play Queen, Keep Yourself Alive. It's going to be touch and go for the next few decades. And I'm pleased to have Guy McPherson in the studio, Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona, Carrie Leiterson, environmental reporter here. Carrie, before the end of the show, we're going to get to a quick Petco update that I got from my buddy Tom Shepard at the Southeast Environmental Task Force. Let's go to the phones and bring in Bob. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, I want to talk about something that I'm also a scientist. I'm a geographer and biologist, retired from the Environmental Protection Agency, and I've gone to some climate change conferences myself. Something that I've not heard anybody talking about that makes it actually worse than what we've been hearing. Climate change scientists generally talk about the loss of albedo as snow fields and ice caps disappear, and the acceleration of change from increasing CO2 release and evolution of methane from the permafrost in the oceans. And we've also heard about the buffer effect offered by the oceans. But what I've not heard discussed, even in the scientific community, is that the ice caps have been providing a massive buffer that will all too soon be gone. I'm talking about the phase change effect here. Heat inputs currently are absorbed by liquid water on the Earth's surface, and that change occurs in a linear fashion at the rate of 1 calorie per gram of water. But polar and glacial ice melt, as the polar and glacial ice melt, every gram of water of ice absorbs 80 calories of heat. If you just look at the hundreds of trillions of tons of polar and glacial ice that already are disappearing due to excessive heat inputs, just imagine the amount of heat that they have been absorbing as they melt. What happens when those are gone, when the ice caps are gone? We'll not only see an accelerating curve, and the slope of that curve is going to be changing as the clathrates release the methane. But we'll see a sharply and very suddenly accelerating curve. Just imagine a glass of water with a few ice cubes in it, you know, sitting on a tabletop, say at 70 degrees Fahrenheit. You place the thermometer in and time the temperature rise. The water in the glass will remain close to the freezing point until the ice is gone. And then suddenly, I mean, comparatively speaking, in a matter of over the next half hour, it will rise up to the same temperature as the rest of the room. You know, it will be held at close to the freezing point as long as there's ice.
Mm.
And that's kind of like, you know, think of the Earth as that glass of water with ice floating in it.
That's an amazing observation, and Dr. McPherson is here nodding his head. Guy, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in my climate change summary and update, I write about that. To convert a gram of ice to a milliliter or a gram of water requires, at 0 degrees, 0 degrees ice to 0 degrees water requires 79.2 calories, about 80 calories, as Bob pointed out. Once that ice is converted to water, so we have liquid water at 0 degrees, we add in 79.2 calories, temperature rises to 79.2 degrees centigrade. So that same energy that is being absorbed by the ice right now, when the Arctic ice is gone, and it will be within a very short period of time, within a few years, all the energy that's being absorbed by that ice and converted to liquid water is going to be warming up very, very quickly.
Can I make a quick ask a quick question about that? We talk about the ice disappearing. Will that be year-round disappearing or just in the summer?
Initially, just in September, mm-hmm. just in the late summer. That's right.
And then gradually, as the oceans warm,
right.
we can expect not to see any ice in the Arctic Sea at all.
That's right. But bear in mind that we haven't had an ice-free Arctic for the last 3 to 5 million years. We've had humans on the planet in some form far less time than that. So we've never had humans on a planet with an ice-free Arctic ever. And that's where we're headed in September in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to let you have one more comment. Yes.
Yeah, it's more than just the you know, North Pole. It's also all the glacial ice at the South Pole and Greenland.
Yeah.
I mean, those are huge ice cubes. They're, you know, much more massive than the North Polar ice.
So let me, Bob, have you read Guy's work? And do you?
No, actually, I haven't. I've been listening to the mainstream scientific community that has been talking about it, but no, I haven't read his work.
Well, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, and see the links there, or you can go to guymcpherson.com. Thank you so much for calling. Wonderful insight. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And let's go to Mark. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning. Mark?
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Got two questions. Hopefully you can get to both of them.
We'll try one because we're running out of time. Try the most important question.
Okay. I guess the most important one is something you've addressed a little bit of, but the two things that are causing inaction. One is the climate deniers. What's the best way to convince people like my parents that it's not just a hoax among the wealthy elite? Al Gore with his 10,000 plus square foot home trying to make money. So that's one simple one. The other one is the other scenario is those who say, yeah, we're doomed. There's nothing we can do. So why should we even try? Or should we just say that's the right path? Eat, drink, be merry, and
well, okay, those are really good questions, and I'm going to let you listen off air, and we have addressed one of them already. You know, you guy have said that we should continue to do what we should to protect the planet, and that is that whole course that Tom Hartman says that you have to have hope, even though you call those people hopia, you call it hopium, that they're smoking the crack pipe of hopium. Do you still say that?
Well, I don't. Yes, I still say that. I think I agree with Nietzsche. Hope in reality is the worst of evils.
There's a pleasant guy.
For it extends the torments of man. And had he not been such a misogynist, I'm pretty sure he would have included women in that, too. Hope is hopeless.
Another reason maybe not to pay attention to Nietzsche.
Action is the antidote to despair. Let's get over hope and act instead.
Okay. And what about the first part about the climate deniers? I mean, there has been a systematic campaign to...
It's a $1 billion-a-year industry in the United States alone, of course. But I don't think... I don't encourage people to try to convince people at this point. The writing is on the wall. People are going to see it. I don't know when they're going to see it, but trying to convince people who are in denial is pretty much a waste of your time. Try to pursue a life of excellence. Try to pursue some joy. Try to live in the moment instead of making other people miserable.
Well, and also, as we've talked about the political process, we know that a bulk of regular people believing in climate change isn't actually going to drive policy anyway. You know, it comes down so much.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've learned that working with politicos over the last few years, and your ideas bounce off their foreheads. They look at you like you're an alien.
I mean, there was massive support for a more comprehensive healthcare reform, and that didn't happen. So that's just a good example of how, you know, convincing regular people, unfortunately, isn't really the real challenge.
Well, we're out of time, and we could go another 3 hours. Dr. McPherson, thank you for stopping by the studio. I hope we help some people understand this a little better and move them to take some action.
Thanks for the opportunity, Mike. I really do appreciate it.
And Carrie, I'm issuing an invitation for you to come back because we really get to the issues that I wanted to. I want to mention that Tom Shepard said the zoning committee, city council will vote on a proposed city ordinance to prohibit new coal and pet coke storage facilities in the city of Chicago next week. He says it's a good first step, not enough. The ordinance prohibits the siting of new facilities, but little to address existing ones. And so he wants the community... the coal and pet coke piles removed and a total ban in such facilities. The hearing is Tuesday, April 1st, 11. I think it says p.m., but I think it means a.m. in City Hall. So that's the way that's going to work. All right, folks. Enjoy the end of the world if you can. And until next week, go green or go home.